speaking of how asset allocation has changed, do you have strategies that allow you to do that without leaving too much money on the table and in terms of paying the tax man on your capital gains? Well, you have tax smarts, right?
Well, yes, exactly. So I think that there are, you know, there are tax smart strategies available. So if you're in a tax smart investment, and they're very careful to look at where you can take a little bit of a capital loss here to offset a capital gain. There are ways of minimizing taxes within that strategy. In addition, any fresh capital, anything that is not exposed to capital gains taxes immediately, I believe should be used to rebalance a portfolio right now.
Welcome back to Insights Now. I'm Gabriela Santos, Chief Market Strategist for the Americas here at JP Morgan Asset Management. As has become tradition for Insights Now, for our final episode of the season, we'll reflect on some of the most important takeaways from the five episodes we recorded. This 15th season was all about the research backing our portfolio managers' investment decisions. And this time, I sat down with some of our multi-asset research analysts from across JP Morgan Asset Management. And we explored a range of topics, including how macroeconomic and policy changes affect asset allocation decisions, how to structure portfolios with a retirement goal in mind, and what quantitative and fundamental research looks like in practice. Today, I'm thrilled to be joined by David Kelly, Chief Global Strategist, as we review the most memorable parts of the wide-ranging conversations we had this season. I'll also ask David his take on some of the topics we covered, including how he sees the overall macro landscape, where he believes we've settled with policy coming out of DC, and how he sees asset allocation evolving from here. If you're listening to the audio version of this podcast, you can watch along on YouTube by tuning in to our JP Morgan Asset Management channel, which is linked in the show notes. Now, let's get started. David, welcome back to Insights Now.
Very glad to be here. And I get to ask the questions first because
you talk to
all our all of these analysts over the course of this season. And I guess the first question I'd have is, you know, relative to recent years, what are some of the key takeaways in terms of asset allocation right now?
I think one of the most important things is this focus on policy. It really seems like something we don't have to do just for thinking about emerging market allocations, but also when we think about developed markets, the U.S. included. And here we're really much more focused outside of monetary policy, fiscal policy, trade, immigration, and reflected in that we now have a policy research analyst involved in the asset allocation decisions. The second thing I think is really interesting is this idea around diversification and this continued move beyond the 60-40 in trying to provide some resilience against inflation, rate shocks, other type of shocks that we weren't used to for 20, 25 years. A lot of that ends up being a conversation about alternatives, especially real assets, gold, as well as hedging strategies. So having to think more creatively. And then lastly, the constant evolution of different strategies within asset allocation. One that Grace Ku really highlighted, our head of quantitative research for total return strategies highlighted, is really this return of alpha in this environment of higher rates, more macro uncertainty, and the role that that can play, whether it's systematic or trend alpha, or just your traditional alpha in selecting securities or doing broad asset allocation. So a lot of change adapt.
Well, yes. I mean, you know, policy, but then also very much a more sophisticated approach is really required in many dimensions for asset allocation right now. But let me come back a little bit to sort of the policy and then also the macroeconomic themes. So can you talk a little bit about, you know, what themes are macroeconomic themes and, I suppose, driven to some extent by policy, are really most, you know, foremost in the thoughts of our analysts at this stage?
So I think a lot of them are really long-term themes that we've really started to embed in the next decade of investing decisions, especially around strategic asset allocation, but that are relevant in the short, medium term as well. Things like economic nationalism, which you see in more protectionist trade policy, which you see in restrictive immigration. We also have a lot more fiscal activism, fiscal spending on a whole variety of quote unquote national security issues. And then lastly, we cannot forget we have this super powerful AI investment and adoption trend. Now, what I think is interesting in terms of tactical asset allocation is what's priced in, what are markets already expecting around these, what's new information, what opportunities come up as sometimes the market gets too excited or too pessimistic about some of this change. So very active in terms of the tactical allocation around these big, slow-moving, long-term themes.
And of course, it's been a super year for equities, for international equities, but even for multi-asset portfolios in general, because fixed income markets have actually now are turning in a pretty decent year also. But of course, when you have it so good after having two brilliant years before that, naturally the mind turns to risk.
Exactly.
So what are our analysts thinking about risks and sort of what risks we face and how to deal with them right now?
That's exactly it. I mean, there's been good reason for it. Resilient economy, surprisingly resilient consumer, the AI wave, very solid earnings, the Fed resuming rate cuts. There's good reason. And so, you know, the discussion wasn't about bubbles and bigger crises coming, but much more about, all right, that's in the price now. Mm-hmm. So what perhaps could go wrong, or where is there still underappreciated opportunity? And I think in the what can go wrong, you never know. Mm-hmm. But from this starting point, very natural to assume that we'll have a 10% correction in the near future, the next few years. What's still underappreciated and could go right, I think a lot of that leads to this ongoing discussion about international. Mm-hmm. How that is such a key part, and it's finally paid fruit this year with the biggest outperformance since 2009, but with still continued opportunity. So really coming to the forefront, things like Japanese equities and emerging market equities.
All right.
David, now I wanted to really turn it back to you to ask you about some of these things that we talked about to get your take. So, for example, we talked about the importance of having a top-down view for the general direction of the economy and corporate fundamentals in terms of tactical and strategic allocation. So how do you see the U.S. and general macro landscape for the rest of this year and, importantly, for 2026?
Well, it has proven to be a very resilient economy. I mean, we've hit it with extraordinary policy shocks, particularly in terms of tariffs this year. Initially, the market sold off very heavily on that, but it has rebounded, even as tariff rates have stayed very high. We've had big changes in immigration. We've had, big geopolitical events. So there's been a lot going on. But what I think we've seen is the economy is fairly resilient. And while, fewer workers and higher tariffs are dragging on the economy, there's some important positives. I mean, one of them, clearly the most obvious one, is this AI boom. And we're seeing, the promise of what AI technology could do, which is really, I think everybody sort of suddenly woke up to it with the release of ChatGPT 2 years ago. But we've seen tremendous investment by these enormous companies, these big hyperscalers, who really have the cash on their balance sheet to do a lot of this investment, at least initially. We've seen them build out their AI capabilities. I think everybody has to have a winning AI story if you're one of these mega cap companies. You're seeing that, but that also means more demand for data centers, more demand for chips, and so that the suppliers of chips are, one obviously in particular has turned into an absolute mammoth of a company. But we've got this enormous demand for chips all around the world, and that's translating also into demand for energy. Just to supply these data centers. And, I think all of that is generating genuine, economic activity, albeit in a relatively narrow sector of the economy. But it's important. I think that's given the economy some resilience. A second thing, I think, has been the OBBBA, where a lot of the benefits for consumers are going to kick in next year. And I think that's going to be very important for our outlook, is that... a lot of these temporary tax cuts In fact, all the temporary tax cuts, the ones that are exposed to expire at the end of 2028, they all became effective as of January 1, 2025. And what that means is you've got a year's worth of people overpaying in their taxes. And that's going to show up in a bumper crop of income tax refunds early next year. And, you know, if you just look at this year, 60% of income tax refunds are paid out electronically by March 30th. And so pretty early next year, you're going to get this bumper crop of income tax refunds pushing money into the consumer sector. I think that's going to lead to further resilience in the economy. And then even this year, we've also got backdated expensing of R&D and equipment purchases so companies can get going on buying new equipment, investing in AI or other technologies, and they can expense that from the perspective of taxes so they can lower the tax bill. These things have been driving the economy forward. And then the third thing is simply the extraordinary increase in wealth that we've seen. I mean, we've seen, you know, as we're recording this, the market is up very strongly year to date. International stocks are up, U.S. stocks are up, international stocks are up more, but even the fixed income markets are doing very well. And that follows two back-to-back blockbuster years for the stock market. So there is this huge accumulation of wealth. And so what we have is very much a K-shaped expansion, where if you look at consumer confidence surveys, people feel pretty grumpy, and they've probably got reason to do it. A lot of lower middle-income households feel like they're getting squeezed, and they're going to feel like they're getting more squeezed as these tariffs kick in. But the top 10, 15, 20% of households in America are doing extremely well. They've seen an increase in their wealth, huge increase in their wealth, and that's allowing them to spend more money. So when we look at the goods and services bought by the richest households in America, and after all, the top 10% get about 50% of the income, so they are important. That, I think, is helping the economy grow going forward. Now, I still think with all of that, that you're still talking about an economy which is kind of tortoise-like in its growth. And I think, you know, this year it's going to be a little slower in the fourth quarter and a little hotter because of the effect of tariffs. But overall, we think the economy will continue to grow. And by the end of next year, we're going to be close to 2% growth, 2% inflation, unemployment at 4%. So I think you'll have a bit of overheating, a bit of stronger growth, and then slowing down again. But ultimately, I think this expansion continues just at a relatively slow pace in terms of the economy overall.
And speaking of the importance of policy mm-hmm. in terms of economic growth, but also most importantly, market behavior, mm-hmm. do you think we have a good feel and we're on solid ground and this is enough for households and businesses and investors to plan? Or do you think there could be some surprises next year?
I think the economy and the markets are two different things here. I think from an economic perspective, the uncertainty around tariffs is still dragging on the economy. I think there are a lot of small businesses who are trying to, you know, pull in inventory. They're not sure if they should even be importing this stuff, given how much they're paying in tariffs for it. They're not sure if the great mass of consumers are going to be able to buy this. And so I think that's a problem. I think we're already seeing slow job growth as much as we can tell as we're recording this, because, of course, the government shutdown has shut down the data. But we are seeing that slowdown there also, and you know, the immigration is having an effect on that too. So I think overall the economy is a little shakier. I think it will perk up early next year, but I think the uncertainty around tariffs, the uncertainty around immigration, I think that is having an impact. But if you look at the markets, there's a different dynamic going on. I mean, I think one of the things that we don't talk about enough is the strange impact of things like capital gains tax laws and the way we structure pension plans these days on the behavior of the market. I mean, I sort of call it the broken valve problem. It's easy to put money into the market, but once you've got money in the market, do you really want to sell out of it? Because if you sell out, you're immediately going to now be declaring a capital gain. If you invested a few years ago, it's a big capital gain. You have to pay the tax. If you just hold on to it until your heirs receive it someday, hopefully many years in the future, nobody pays the tax. But people have to, you know, if you think the market's going to slide and then bounce back, why would you ever sell? And then equally, you know, it used to be defined benefit pension plans would rebalance and rebalance and rebalance. I don't see a lot of rebalancing going on in 401k plans. People, you know, again, people are just piling into whatever's done well recently, kind of ignoring it. So there's a lot of money going into markets, not a lot of coming out. And I think the system is set up to keep that going. But of course, there is a danger that things just get very overvalued in that scenario.
Yeah, you just keep ending up with more and more exposure to what's just worked. Very concentrated at expensive valuations, which eventually do correct, like we saw earlier.
Well, that's right. And I mean, and you know, we are seeing, I think we will see continued interest rate cuts from the Federal Reserve. I think they'll cut interest rates at least down to what they call neutral, which is 3%. And they might cut more than that if inflation actually falls below 2% late next year. But I think that's, you know, that's down the road from here. But it is, you know, the markets are somewhat bubbly here. And I do worry a little bit about adding more liquidity with low interest rates here. You know, this the animal spirits are running rampant here. And, you know, if you go to the zoo, they say, don't feed the animals.
I think
the Federal Reserve should really think about that a little bit because, you know, as we've seen in the tech bubble, as we saw in the housing bubble, you know, bubbles as they're growing tend to increase inequality. Bubbles, when they burst, can really affect the macroeconomy. So I think, you know, you talked about how people are diversifying or how they need to diversify. Mm. And they really do, because at some stage, you're going to see a significant market correction.
And do you have, speaking of how asset allocation has changed, do you have strategies that allow you to do that without leaving too much money on the table and in terms of paying the tax man on your capital gains? Well, you have tax smarts, right?
Well, yes, exactly. So I think that there are, you know, there are tax smart strategies available. So if you're in a tax smart investment and they're very careful to look at where you can take a little bit of a capital loss here to offset a capital gain, there are ways of minimizing taxes within that strategy. In addition, any fresh capital, anything that is not exposed to capital gains taxes immediately, I believe should be used to rebalance a portfolio right now.
Looking for industry-leading insights on markets and the economy? Our Guide to the Markets illustrates a comprehensive array of market and economic histories, trends, and statistics through clear charts and graphs. For more information on the guide, visit our website at jpmorgan.com/GTM.
Third thing is, if you've got money in tax-exempt accounts such as 401ks, you know, you need to lean all the way to one side to offset, to try and rebalance your sort of tax-exposed portfolio. So I think there are ways of minimizing your exposure here, but I think people need to be constantly thinking about, you know, returns have been wonderful, but it's not just about returns. It's also about minimizing risks. And, you know, you don't have to be very conservative. I mean, frankly, you know, most people are going to end up being too aggressive anyway, even after they've rebalanced. But I think I think a real resolution for 2026 is, you know, check rebalancing, see how you can rebalance without paying higher taxes.
And let 2025 be an example, not just because the market ended up doing well, but what we went through along the way. In February, March, April, we did have a big sell-off exactly in these areas that individuals were very concentrated on.
Yeah, and I'm very aware of what happened in the first decade of this century, where we saw two very long, very big market corrections. It lasted, you know, a year to year and a half. The market went down 50%. And I think it's really, you know, the market may do that again at some stage. Probably will. The trick is for your portfolio not to go down 50%. And that's why you need to really think about balance and rebalance here.
Certainly not an easy time for portfolio construction. Mm-hmm. David, as a last question, I always ask the guests on the show a bonus question, which I haven't asked you yet. So here we go. What's very top of mind for you in terms of a recommendation of a book, a podcast, a movie? I know you always have good ones for us in the team, but what would you like to share for others?
Of course, I usually talk about all the ancient books. I'm rather a fan of 19th century literature.
Charles Dickens.
Yeah, exactly. That sort of stuff. But I do think that this is a time to really understand technology. Mm-hmm. And so the two books I'd recommend. One is actually a fairly easy read. It's just called AI Valley, which has just come out in the last month or two. But it really talks about all the AI startups in Silicon Valley and then their relationship with the big hyperscaler companies and you know what, and it sort of gives you an inside view of how this AI revolution, this AI boom is going. And I think it's very important. I think every investor today needs to understand what's basically going on with the AI boom here and to try and avoid a bubble bursting over their heads. Another book I've been rereading actually is called The Gene, An Intimate History by a guy called Siddhartha Mukherjee. And Siddhartha Mukherjee, back in 2011, wrote a wonderful book which got a Pulitzer Prize. It was given awarded one of the best 100 books of the century. called The Emperor of All Maladies, about cancer and cancer research, which is a grim topic, but it's really interesting. It's important to know about. But he's actually going to update that book in November. Because so much has changed in terms of cancer research, and so much good has happened in terms of cancer research and understanding stuff, but he's completely updated that book, and he's going to be putting out a new version on November 25th. So that's in my wish list for the end of the year.
To buy list. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. And I forgot to mention also an internal piece that you'd recommend.
That we have within J.P. Morgan that we've written?
Within J.P. Morgan. Doesn't have to be ours, but could be our team.
Well, yes. Well, I think I'm going to be completely self-serving here and say that people really should read our upcoming outlook for 2026. So we're working, as you know, you and I and our whole team right now is trying to figure out, okay, what's the most likely path for the economy? What are some of the risks around it? What are some of the risks around markets also? And really try to lay out how to invest in 2026 and beyond. So, please watch for that when it comes out.
Good plug. And we will definitely also be recording a podcast on that. Mm-hmm. So look for that in your feed in the near future. Thank you, David, much for joining. And thank you for joining us today for our Season 15 Wrapped. This episode marks the end of Season 15 of Insights Now, but don't worry, we will be back shortly. To all our viewers and listeners, thank you for tuning in today, and we'll speak to you soon.
This material is for information purposes only. The views, opinions, and statements of financial market trends that are based on current market conditions are those of the speaker and may differ from those expressed J.P. Morgan Asset Management or by other areas of J.P. Morgan Chase & Co. Any companies referenced are shown for illustrative purposes only and are not intended as a recommendation. We believe the information provided here is reliable, but should not be assumed to be accurate or complete. The views and strategies described may not be suitable for all investors.
This content is intended for information only based on assumptions and current market conditions and are subject to change. No warranty of accuracy is given. This content does not contain sufficient information to support investment decisions. It is not to be construed as research, legal, regulatory, tax, accounting, or investment advice. Investments involve risks. Investors should seek professional advice or make an independent evaluation before investing. The value of investments and the income from them may fluctuate, including loss of capital. Past performance and yield are not indicative of current or future results. Forecasts and estimates may or may not come to pass. J.P. Morgan Asset Management is the asset management business of J.P. Morgan Chase & Company and its affiliates worldwide.